to the Red Car District, the Women's World Cup edition. I'm here with Libby Wells, talented writer, former U.S. Soccer Federation, all-around badass from 2008 to 2014. Worked with the men's and women's national teams. She is here to talk the Women's World Cup with us because, for better or worse, currently things are on strike, and she has a little bit of time to talk football with us. So
lots of time, actually.
Yeah. So welcome to the show, Libby. It's great to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Let's get to the business. We are at the quarterfinal stage of the Women's World Cup, and unfortunately, the United States, for the only time in our entire existence, are not at this stage. Haven't reached it. Didn't think that we'd be having this conversation without them being here.
Not this early.
So let's dig into, first and foremost, our U.S. women's national team that, you have to say, probably severely underperformed this tournament.
Yes, in terms of underperformers of the tournament, number one spot goes to U.S. so far. Definitely a surprise to be talking about this early, but not a surprise after watching how they played through the group stage, and especially meeting Sweden this early on, who I think would be probably the favorites at this point. But just uninspired. I hate to use that term because I feel like a lot of the talking heads were saying that, but like, it is the feeling that we got, at least having seen the team for the last, what, four iterations World Cup. This just felt really flat.
Yeah, it didn't seem like they had the right momentum going into it. Obviously, one thing that's going to be big with a lot of these teams we talk about are the different injuries that they've suffered, you know. And I mean, the shitty thing is that, you know, the history books don't look back into who was injured, who didn't make the tournament. But, you know, we had a lot of, I felt like this roster was a big combination of players a little past their prime.
Yeah.
And quite a few young players getting their first blood. So it was kind of a weird mixed roster that we still expected a lot out of because of what we had. But I think there are a few more players that are still a little closer to their peak that we were missing out on that probably had, I don't know, like, their absences potentially had some players playing bigger roles in this tournament than we expected them to.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's the thing, like, for what we're talking about, I think context is important. First and foremost, I mean, you can't, like, put the whole performance on this, but to not talk about that we lost our captain weeks before the tournament, Becky Sauerbrunn, just in terms of, like, that foundation in the back, someone that has had the experience of World Cup through wins and losses. So not having that experience and not having that personality there, who, I mean, she really is, having worked with a team with her, she really is kind of like a, I don't want to say mother figure, but that sort of like calm presence, leadership. So to lose that right off the bat, you know, we're already kind of on our heels. And then I know that one of our better players, Rose, she was dealing with some injuries, didn't get all the playing time that I would have liked her to see her play. Even though when she did come in, she like probably was one of the biggest difference makers. So at least for me, that was sort of like the starting point to see how those younger players came in to step in. And unfortunately, it didn't feel like that. At least I think the bench, like you had said, some players passed their prime. I hate to say that because obviously like leadership, I think that's one of those things. Abby Wambach probably was one of those good examples of like staying with the team beyond maybe being in the starting 11, but you felt like to have her there really helped out. But I didn't really get that feeling from O'Hara this time.
Yeah, I feel like last World Cup, like having Carly Lloyd there, but she's such a legend. You know, with some of these, you know, you see it, the leadership, the experience, what they lend to it, and that, you know, and that, like, Carly Lloyd is an example of it going well.
Yes,
but that's not always the case, right? That's not always.
And we don't know, like, and as you're saying that, we also don't know what was happening in the locker room.
Right.
We don't know really the power of having someone like Rapinoe, who has been such a figurehead, having someone like Kelly O'Hara, who has also been such a foundation in the back. Having those players there just for keeping up morale is actually oftentimes very important.
Right.
Do then someone like Carly Lloyd do the same thing and then able to step in and make a difference on the field too? Yes. So that's, I think, what we were missing, that final piece. Obviously, you know, it's easy to point to Rapinoe because of Miss PK, et cetera. But, I appreciate them for what they've done. Just a disappointing kind of last moments with them. But I also want to talk about how the whole thing was received and maybe how they're treated, but we could probably put a pin in that and circle back to reception.
Yeah, we'll get back to that.
Yeah.
But one other thing, just thinking about it, just after what this result, I mean, considering it's the worst performance in a World Cup that we've seen as far as results-based, how do you feel about head coach Vlatko Andonovski? He's at the end of his deal at the end of this year,
yeah.
So
Well, you know, I think, again, locker room, because this is something I can speak from experience, having been with the team during, like, Pia Sundhage's, her era, she was such a force, and there was such a personality that she brought to the team that you could see on the field, as well as the morale. I don't know if I got a sense of who this coach was, especially in this tournament. So, for me, that's, like, a big thing. I oftentimes don't like to speak to, like, I feel like that's what the fans often go to, the media often goes to, where it's just, like, fire the coach. But to not feel any sort of his presence, I actually am kind of like, you know, and then to look at strategy, like, you know, against Netherlands, one sub, you know, I mean, a huge difference. He brought in Rose. That was a great call. She made the difference, sort of changed the momentum. However, now maybe like make some more changes if it's still not, we're not able to execute. So sort of curious choices. Also with a roster, like we were just talking about, having players who are, you know, have the experience, that may be something behind the scenes that it's bigger than we realize. However, to see people like Morgan, to see people like Rapinoe make very little difference this tournament and really not execute, it makes you kind of wonder, like, was that the right choice? You know, these big stars, like, was it because of their star power, or is it because he saw something that fit in there that we didn't?
Yeah, I mean, it's to your point though, with that, like, if you don't see the fingerprint, you know, you don't see like the DNA of the team or molded into a fashion in which they play, like there didn't seem to be a big identity outside of what the normal, you know, I mean, yeah, like USA, rah, rah, like we're good, we're going to do this and that. But there wasn't like a very clear tactical formula. It didn't seem like, okay, you know, we're going to, you know, we have a real idea to, you know, to play tight passes, make it down the wings. I mean, the team made chances, right? The team made chances, and their match against Sweden, it was a very difficult match back and forth. And a point that you made when we were speaking earlier was that, you know, the Swedish team and the Swedish goalkeeper, let me get her name real quick before I fuck that up. She's been very good. Her name is Zasira.
Am I good luck saying that?
Musovic.
We didn't practice.
Yeah, Musovic. No, no, I saw it. Then I have it like on eyesight. Yeah, Musovic, the keeper. They're number one.
Yeah.
For this whole tournament, and definitely these last couple knockout games and whatnot, has put a hell of a performance, and it's a, you know, huge performance to not just deny them in the penalty shootout, but a bunch of big saves and not just regular saves, but, you know, we saw one time where, you know, where the ball was played a little too loose off the striker's foot, and she came out and cut down the angle, broke it down, and was a commanding goalkeeper and commanded her box. And that's one of those things that confident. That as far as what we've seen, I mean, in these last couple rounds in general, I feel like the goalkeeping has been amazing as far as, you know, from the good teams making the difference to keep a team in it or to make the, you know, the big impact.
Absolutely. So. I think, I mean, that game in particular, both the keepers had a huge imprint on everything. And it is interesting because we go out into this talking about the coach, like to think that that's like our takeaway of games. Like that's pretty wild. I can't remember the last World Cup game ever really where I was thinking the two keepers on both sides were actually like the stars of the show.
Yeah, probably the man of the match. The woman of the, the person of the match.
And then everyone else being like a huge distant second, not just simply because it's a great close. Save. You made a good point too, because just thinking about their personality, like obviously I think that comes from the coach first and, you know, making the decision, what kind of team are we? What's our strategy? What's our tactical approach? And I really could not tell you after watching four games currently what that would be like. It really felt like it changed throughout the games, but not because of purposeful adjustments. It simply felt like there was not that specific strategic choice. And I kept waiting for, and I thought we got it, then thinking about the players, now it's up to them to maybe make that choice as well. And in the past, I think we've had those moments where it's like this assertion of who we are, like, you know, an Abby Pino combination in, what was that, 2011, where it's like we're scoring against Brazil in the like 1:22 minute, whatever that, or like a Carly Lloyd dominating hat trick. Obviously before that, there's Abby, there's Mia Hamm. These statement players, and I thought we got that with Horan. I would say like she was probably the one player of this tournament, maybe along with Rose, that like she made a statement, especially in that Netherlands game, to like be so dominant in the first half and then to come back. We can talk about that sequence and how awesome of a narrative was. But like that was the moment that I thought, okay, I understand who this team is and Horan's got this. But then that fire, you know, obviously one player can't continue to do that by themselves, but also the fire and the urgency didn't seem to translate for the rest of the games.
Yeah, and I mean, in the match against Sweden, you know, she had like one chance early in the game that was definitely not an easy chance by any means. But, you know, she kind of shanked it off wide and then didn't really, like, you know, still had a bit influence on the match, but didn't, you know, didn't get in a position to make a big impact and score the goals. And you needed someone to step up, you know. Yeah. You had young players that got the ball at their feet with a chance to do something. Alex Morgan had several balls to her that, whether or not they were, you know, they weren't all golden chances or anything like that. No. But she couldn't, we know her quality. She could have done better. You know, she has been, you know, of this generation of player that's now in their mid-30s, that's just before the retirement age that we have of, like, Rapinoe and others, you know, she's the one that's the golden child of what we have. And you know, without much support and, you know, just not putting shots on target.
Like, yeah. You know, not putting shots on target, not understanding that maybe, because, like, I definitely thought against Sweden, it stood out to me that perhaps she was not that effective or finishing, because her style is kind of like, for lack of a better term, like a sloppy toe poke around a keeper that's coming out, or just like a slip underneath, like breakaway, like a great run, breakaway chance. But, like, she's not faster than back lines anymore, it doesn't seem like.
Yeah.
And the players, especially with Sweden, great goalkeeper and solid back line, they were able to adjust that she really didn't get those chances, but I didn't see her then creating plays for her other players either.
Right.
It seemed definitely like once we got into the final third, once we got, you know, something to our 9 or 10, like, then they just holding on to the ball and taking a shot just sort of like out of panic. It didn't seem composed. I think that's probably like the biggest thing for us is just, you know, I think we only had one goal scored against us in this tournament.
Well, yeah, one goal scored against.
So,
that's it.
I mean, defense and midfield, I felt like we're holding it down. Could there have been more fire? Absolutely. But truly, like, I just don't, it was just not a memorable performance by anyone at top.
But there just weren't enough goals scored. There weren't enough chances created across the board for the entire tournament. You know, this is not what we've come to expect from the U.S. team. So,
lacking firepower was tough. Horan Smith combo, like, for the first three goals. Horan, like, you know, two players creating all those chances. Right. Like, you know, it just, we needed to have just more diversity, just more confident finishing, which we didn't have.
I mean, I think the one good thing looking forward is that we did bleed a few really good, strong, young new players this tournament, and that they should be able to, even though it might not have been the ideal situation, I think you're saying before, maybe if we still had, like, if Tobin Heath had been available, if we had other, you know, other players that we were missing that we normally have in the mix right now, the one good thing that may have come from that is that we got to see these younger players in a bigger role, whether it's Smith or Rodman or anything like that, who should be cornerstones of this team for years to come.
Yes.
Got a chance and got, you know, learned, but also have, you know, I've learned what some people from the recent generation haven't tasted of, like, you know, defeat early in a tournament. Like, usually, you know, this is something they can build from and take it as an experience and, like, you know, understand how much it hurts to be considered one of the favorites and go out this early. It's got to sting.
Totally.
Know? And use that as fuel to push themselves to be better the next time around. I mean, it feels like because of the early, the demise of this team, that there's going to be that. I mean, I don't know. It seems like with the likelihood of there being a new coach coming in after the season, right? Because whether or not you don't have to fire this guy because he's also out of contract at the end of the year. So, you know, you could bring in someone new for the new cycle. You know, you send a bunch of players out and you tell them, thank you for your service. You know, you pick, you know, hand pick a couple of those players. I mean, how many of those mid-30s players do you think will be around in the next World Cup? I mean, is there anyone that you think of?
I mean, I can't, on this current roster, I can't imagine any of them coming back. I mean, if we're talking about, like, the true kind of senior players.
Yeah, I'm trying to look. I mean, like O'Hara's 35. She's not going to be there again.
I mean, she really didn't get much playing time at all.
Yeah, and Ertz is 31, and she retired afterwards anyway, right? Yeah. So then we have Crystal Dunn at 31, Christy Mewis at 32.
On the younger 30 side, I feel like they had solid performances, like, and I didn't expect them to have, you know, I think they did the job. So I was more thinking of, like, O'Hara, Morgan, Rapinoe. I'm trying to think if I'm missing anyone.
Yeah, those are 34, 38. Yeah, those are. Crystal Dunn's 31. If she's still the best at her position, she'd come back next time around. Yeah, I mean, I guess with Horan being 29, she's got another World Cup in her, right?
Absolutely.
Rose Lavelle is 28. So those two should still be around their peak, you know, with the way athletics are now.
I appreciate, like, I think you're right. Like, that's absolutely the sort of, and we can maybe get into the reception of this. I think that from the beginning, I think everyone was acknowledging that this is, like, absolutely kind of an untested team, or, like, the the difference between the young players and the old players, like there's not a lot of the bridge there of players that have a ton of experience.
Right.
So, you know, I hate the term rebuilding year, but like it's got to happen. It's going to happen in cycles. And so, wow, we've won 4 World Cups. How many gold medals? Like,
right.
I think that these women absolutely have done the job. And at some point, something like this is going to happen. And, you know, obviously we also went out on PKs, which is just like one of those heartbreaking things. But I feel like I totally lost my train of thought with that. I feel like just the rebuilding of it makes sense. It doesn't seem like it's a disaster. Maybe yeah. The performance was, but the sense of like the U.S. is no longer the superpower that we were. I just feel like I don't think that we're not going to be able to bounce back from this. And I do think, to your point, seeing how the girls have reacted, especially the younger ones, like their statements that they've made, they are so focused on the soccer itself, and they've acknowledged like we didn't perform the way we wanted to or the way that we probably could have, but here we go, like forward, onward. It's not, there's no excuses made. Like I've been actually pretty impressed by the reaction, considering all of the negative and like unsoccer related content that's been thrown at them in response. So I'm excited to see where it goes. It's going to be an interesting 4 years.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. And so, you know, we can look forward to a bunch of these players coming back. Like you said, there'll still be some of the leadership group intact. You know, you've got to think as far as who you expect to still be on top of their game, having like Rose and Lindsay still probably being, you know, at around the top of the game. They'll probably be starters for us. They'll probably be the veteran leadership that they show. And you have people like, you know, Trinity Rodman will be 25. Sophia Smith will be 26, 27. You know, like that's...
Yeah, both of them, those 4 players, I think, were the standouts for me. In terms of seeing Smith, look, she scored at least 2 goals. She performed. Obviously, missing the PK is one thing, but
right.
I think she did the job that she needed to do. I think that Rodman definitely, her presence was felt, even if she didn't convert it. But like just her speed, and she seemed to be more technical than a lot of the other girls that were out there. And I mean, Rose for me and Horan were probably the MVPs on our team. Like. Rose coming in off the bench and making a huge difference and changing the whole momentum, tone of the game, everything. And she, her speed, I was excited by, I think we outperformed in terms of speed all the teams. And so knowing that we still have that, I think that there's just a lot of hope for what's to come. And especially with those 4 players, those would definitely be kind of my highlights. And also our goalie.
Yep. All right, let's go to a couple of the other underperformers. We'll quickly just glance over it, because there's one that stands out in particular. The two highest teams that drop out that didn't make it out of the qualifying rounds. You had Germany and you had Brazil. You know, for Brazil, you know, Marta being back for one more World Cup and then this and coming out and like putting up a showing like that, they're gonna have to look at themselves pretty hard in the mirror as well. You know, think about it, because these are the teams that were at the forefront at the top, and like you're talking about, like it's not like. The other countries are like you said. The USA is not gone as a power, right? It's still going to be there. Brazil is still going to be a huge power, and you know they still played some beautiful football, but it was a lot of. I guess I'm going to throw a little shade anyway. There's a lot of like Neymar flicks and tricks, but not a lot of end right. product, right? So yeah. You saw him like passing around these players and that, but then not actually executing and you know and being ruthless and scoring the goals. It was
having those things be purposeful. As opposed to, you know, right. like
instead of just flair for right. the fuck of it, you know, that's yeah. not what we're.
Well, it's funny to pick to Brazil and Germany being on the opposite ends of the spectrum, because I feel like it's like Germany is the similar to how we looked. It's just like their style of play is often sort of a lack of style, if that makes sense.
The machine.
Yeah. Which yeah. is very effective a lot of times, but missing that creativity. So it's almost like if those
ruthless efficiency,
which is, it's fun to watch when it works, but you yeah. know, it also like, I think, if you look at the teams that are succeeding, like their different styles of play, you know, we have Spain, we have Colombia, like they're not, it's not just the European teams at this point, which is oftentimes usually with the women, you know, also Canada too. Cause like there was a time with Sinclair that they actually were up there and
yeah, they
in
were
the
contenders.
Mix.
Yeah.
So if you think about Canada, Brazil, us, you know, we're all kind of in the same boat of having these like huge star players that maybe, were, you know, on the roster, maybe not having, you know, taking a spot from a younger person that can maybe add more minutes. You know, who's to say, but
yeah.
Well, rebuilding for all of them.
Well, let's get to the match that we just saw yesterday. So we're all in right. the midst of the quarterfinals. So we have 2 yet to come. The, France play Australia later tonight, and England have Colombia. But the two that have elapsed so far, we saw yesterday in the evening we had Spain versus the Netherlands, which was a highly contested, tough match. And then we had Japan versus Sweden, which for me, I think that might be my pick of the tournament as far as the best matches I've seen so far in this tournament. That's as far as what I've seen. I think that's fair. But let's start with the Spanish match against the Netherlands team. The Netherlands team was missing one of their stars, Danielle van de Donk, which is a big miss for them. Yellow card accumulation.
The yellow card.
That was pretty brutal. They came out. They definitely played a more defensive formation and tried to catch Spain on the break. And, what we saw was a first half performance that was pretty dominant from Spain, that we were quite lucky that basically the Netherlands could consider themselves quite lucky to have not conceded a goal or two with the luck of a few posts, which seems to be a theme in this tournament.
Posts performed better than Netherlands did in the first half, I would say.
Yeah, definitely.
More presence.
Made more saves. Made more saves than the keeper did. Absolutely. And then seeing from that, but then the way they worked themselves back into the match, and they had chances. We had penalties called both ways that got taken back. I think we're in agreement that the first one, it was clear the girl was offside in the first goal that Spain scored, and then the penalty that was given and then taken away, I think we both had questions about it. I both had questions about the refereeing.
That was a very odd moment. I mean, it's interesting too, because I don't remember what minute that was, but first half, I just feel like there was no question in my mind. I was like, unless Netherlands makes a huge adjustment, Spain has this game. It's just a matter of time. I think Spain had like 10 shots on goal or something before Netherlands even really got there.
Oh,
but
yeah.
That was a very, I mean, that's a coaching choice. They obviously had, their formation? It was like a 2-5-2. It was something.
It was like a 3-5-2.
3-5-2, yeah. Which, really relied on their Berenstain up top, which we saw her, at least in the second half, have many chances and not convert. But,
But she's the one that earned the penalty in the first half, which you have to give credit to. I mean, what I will say, as wasteful as she was with her chances, and something that she should think about before she opens her mouth and talks to other teams. I mean, look, if she dishes it, as long as she takes it in good faith, it's all good. But I mean, she put herself, it was her pace that got her in front of the defender.
Absolutely.
Which meant it should have been a red card and a sending off. Like the whole complexion of that game should have changed. That's a red card sending off, and it's a 1-0 lead. And everything's different, right?
That's why I'm wondering what I don't know if we have the timeline, know what minute that is, but to have that be possibly the momentum shift, because if just looking at the narrative up till that point, it was just like Netherlands wasn't in it, but she created that chance. It was absolutely a PK. It's a red card, last player there. I do not know what the referee was looking at. More angles made it clearer that there was contact, and that's one of those calls that Netherlands have to shake off. And they did, because I would say when they came back in the second half, it absolutely was a different tone. And I attribute that to the coaching. Once they went one down, Vanderhart with the handball, she comes back after one adjustment and scores a goal. So, that's an example of great coaching. I think that the Netherlands coach probably is the best performer on their side of the game. Overall, I'm curious to hear why you pick the Japan-Sweden game, because I actually found this game super exciting, but we can get into that after we talk about this.
I found them both very exciting, and I thought this was, I felt like what I saw in the Swedish match versus Japan was the two contrasting styles, and like what we saw from Japan and the way they came out and like the way they beat Spain, right? Not having much possession, but ruthless efficiency. And you saw there were a couple players there. Their right back, the number two that's running down the wing, was making some amazing, like exactly what you want from like her delivery from the right back position going down that line. She put dangerous balls in every time. And basically, even though there was significantly less chances for them in that match against Sweden, and also same thing in the match against Spain earlier in the group stage, it was intricate, tight passing that cut open the team they're playing against. And it's just a different style, because like they're obviously like size wise they're significantly smaller than these big European teams. These Swedish girls, like they've got a bunch of players that are 5'10". Like that's a normal height in their team, 5'8" to 5'10". There's not a lot of girls 5'4" or shorter. Where in the Japan team, that's the majority. That's the normal height of the squad.
No, that makes sense, because as you're saying that, thinking about sort of we were talking about the imprint of the fingerprint of or the style of these teams. you know, the Spain and Netherlands game, while I could definitely recall just on, like, after first watch that Spain was dominant, Netherlands created those chances up top just because of the way that they were playing, and, you know, Berenstain creating those chances, threading it through, outrunning the players. Overall, though, they definitely were not necessarily, you know, I don't know about technique-wise, there was nothing that was standout from either of them, other than just, like, Spain maybe just having more of a fluid kind of, like, they had more sequences that they put together. Like, there definitely was more of a build. But you're right. Like, I can absolutely tell you the two different styles between Sweden and Japan. And that way, you know what? Now you've converted me. Maybe that is the most exciting game of the tournament so far.
Well, you know,
at least most interesting.
Well, between that and, like, the amount of posts that were hit, the saves, like, the Japanese goalkeeper kept them in the match that first half. So it was like, what we saw, which I thought there was a lack of, like, the first half in that Spain match, they had some chances, but no one put a good quality finish on it. So they're like, every shot seemed to be pretty much at the goalkeeper. It wasn't at full stretch to make a save. Like, we saw the quality and the caliber, and even with the saves of, like even the drama late in the Japan Sweden match where the Japan player takes the free kick, takes the penalty kick, and it goes off the crossbar, hits off the goalkeeper and bounces out. Like, there was huge drama.
Yeah.
And, you know, and they miss that and you think it's over, and then they get the goal in the 90th minute, you know, like all those things together. I mean, look, it was hugely entertaining that in the same way that the Dutch got the equalizing goal in the 91st minute, with 10 minutes of injury time to go, you're like, oh shit, it's on.
Yeah.
And we got the extra time, and we got all that, and
it's true that the extra time was, like, also, I mean, you could just tell those legs were tired. There wasn't a lot that went on. But, I mean, to speak to that, I think that's a good point. The Danish goalkeeper, she really didn't even have to move her feet with all of her saves. Like, they did definitely, I mean, they were well struck, a lot of the Spanish shots, but they were not necessarily, never really pushed the keeper to actually
none of them were put in the corner and this and that. No. And where, like, that Japan keeper in the first half made three saves of great, like, that would have been great goals.
Yes.
That were better shots than we saw in the entirety of the other match, except for, you know, like, when the Dutch scored their one goal, that was a great shot. The winning goal from the young Spanish player was fucking amazing. Like,
super composed for a 19-year-old.
Yeah, amazing shit. I mean, fuck, of course, just what Barcelona need is more super talented players, those fuckers.
But also, I do think that's interesting because, obviously Spain's going through. I think for them, I was really impressed in the first half, but then as the second half went on, I was like, they're going to need more to take this tournament. Like, absolutely, the finishing, while they created those chances and they dominated, they kept possession most of the time. Once it got there, it's like, you're not going to win this tournament by hitting a shot right at the goalkeeper. Like, the tournament, the talent's too good. Well, and then also their back line, that's the other thing. The Netherlands definitely pushed them and kind of made me, their goalkeeper did not look confident.
No.
Their choices, just like in terms of out the back, really some shady passing back there. Defender's not putting in a good position. So
not looking too composed.
I think they've had an own goal already, actually. So that's something that I would definitely watch out for as Spain moves forward.
Yeah, like I said, that back line definitely doesn't look impermeable. You know what I mean? Like, Sweden's definitely going to have a chance against them. That's for damn sure. I mean, I think one of the big storylines for Spain, like, so as opposed to, you know, there's been a big rise recently in the women's game of an excessive amount of ACL injuries. There's been a lot of cruciate tears, and, you know, people are talking about the overloading of the schedule, the too many games, playing the international tournaments, all this kind of stuff. And you have someone like, you know, Alexa Putellas for Spain came on in extra time for them, but, you know, she's not being started because she's not been fully fit. She tore her knee last year. You know, we're missing the best, you know, the star player from, you know, I know these because, like, Arsenal women had four cruciate injuries this year, and these are two, you know, the captain and the star striker for England are both missing through cruciates last year, happening with Arsenal. And Viv Miedema, who is someone that's an ever-present in these big tournaments, who's been a perennial top three player in the world, had hers as well. And, you know, they're not back fully fit.
No.
You know, Spain...
Yeah, when did they put in? I feel like it was...
They put her in the 95th minute or something like that. It was like once the extra time started. She got 15, 20 minutes.
Right.
And I think it was also, you know, like, she's the women's player of the year for 2021 and 2022.
Right.
You know, like, she is...
Recent history.
She is the best player in recent... Like, she finished ahead of Viv. Viv Miedema, like, at least one of those two seasons, Viv was second or both of them. And, yeah, amazing, amazing player. But, you know, we're not seeing the best of her at the tournament because she's not fully fit yet. They're not going to rush her back, you know. And
which I think we could sense that because, absolutely, it's sort of that spark, that final finish that they definitely didn't have. Even though they did convert, they were able to do that. It felt like, in terms of how much they dominated, where, you know, where's the 3-0 by halftime?
Yeah, well, mad credit to Parayuelo, the young girl from the place for Barcelona, for her finish, for that being a very well composed, nice step over in off the inside of the post. Post doing so much today. Post
fucking post got the assist or the finishing touch for both the Spanish goals. Yeah, PK went off the post and then that shot went off the post. So, and then I feel like there was, what were the other posts? Oh, there's
post
crossbar.
And
the
post
other
and crossbar.
Game.
All those, yeah, all those games.
Yeah,
yeah, it's been
post saved Spain's
lots.
Butt.
Yeah, lots and lots of action for it. That's for damn sure. So,
actually, was there a handball? Was that the Netherlands game that went off the post twice? And I think it was one of the Netherlands defender as she was getting out basically stopped the ball.
Oh yeah, like hit her arm. And they're like, oh, no replay.
I did forget
like,
about
whoa.
That. So
I was
right there. There was
about
this,
that. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think that's one of those when they're talking about the natural position because she was getting up off of it. So that's why they're not
doing
anything.
She didn't move into it. She was already there.
She was already there. She's using it to prop her weight up and then it hit her in the arm. But it's still like.
But with this referee, you don't know.
Yeah, you never know what she's going to say. Yeah, her judgment was pretty sus.
Yeah. Also, I always was waiting for the hand motions of like, okay, you got the VAR and then it's like, is this a goal or not? And then just the blowing the whistle. Much like what happened with U.S. Sweden during the PKs, no one even knew did they win.
Yeah,
what's happening?
What happened here?
But you know, you live and you learn, and maybe she won't ref.
Hopefully FIFA was watching that. Maybe I can slip a word to Arsene Wenger, be like, "Yo, get her off the next match. Like, we don't need her in the semis. That she was a quarterfinal quality, not good enough to make the final four.
Yeah,
like it should only be the two best referees left from the quarterfinals. So."
The
other ref in the later matches did a pretty good job.
Yeah.
If we see one of those two, one of them do a good job in the two matches tonight, hopefully that's the one that proceeds.
That's an interesting sort of like.
No, but
can we predict?
No, but that's literally yeah. Well, we should see. All right, so we'll say it was a semifinal between those two, and we clearly know which referee won.
Yeah.
So she should get the that blonder referee or whatever.
I wonder what Vegas is saying. The odds
are for that. The odds are. Yeah, we got a pool on who's going to referee.
There's
got to
be something like that.
Who's the favorite for the Women's World Cup?
Exactly. Find out in 3 days or Tuesday.
3 days. So we will see. So we'll see who does a better job tonight. We'll have bets on that live on the site. we'll figure that out. We'll see who does a good job because those are gonna be exciting matches. But let's stick with those ones that we were watching.
Yeah.
So Spain advance after scoring an extra time.
Deserved, I would say.
Deserved. You know, like I said, the Dutch had their chances. If homegirl had. You know, put away the chance instead of talking so much. You know, she could have been like, there's easily a world where that penalty changes the whole thing of the game. Even without that, the chances they had later, the chance right before they got scored on where she had a chance in front of goal to put it in.
It really teed up that goal because I was also surprised by she had two chances like kind of around the 110th minute, and her reactions to it were she didn't like pop up. There was not the urgency that you would think you would have.
Right.
And I don't know why that stuck with me because then after the second time that she had, I think that was the 111th minute, she went down and then the like literally three passes later, Spain, you know, they're up, they're going through. So it was just an interesting sort of sequence to see how that played out in terms of a narrative and just like if you're the one that's sort of carrying the team right now, like maybe that's not the reaction that you have and that there's more urgency.
Yeah. And it was such like the momentum change right there. Like that was the moment where they all, you know, could have all been done. And, you know, they had the momentum with them because they scored the late goal to send it to extra time. And like, the you know, where they got completely dominated off the park in the first half and were lucky for it to be 0-0. Like that match definitely evened out over the second half. So you have to, like you said, give the Netherlands a little bit of credit for reshuffling a little bit, you know, figuring out how to apply a little more pressure. You know, they rode their luck, but then they made it through. But, you know, at the end of it, they didn't go through, and that's it. So what we have in Spain, though, what's a big comment about it is that they say the Spanish have some of the best, most talented players playing in Barcelona and all this kind of stuff. But for them, similar to in some of these other very, like, football-rich countries with this heritage, haven't been great to the women's game, right?
No.
So they say going to play for the Spanish Federation is a big step backwards for these players because it's not treated the same way. It's not given the respect that it should have.
Yeah.
And it's treated at second rate. And so that's why they've talked about it. Like, because part of the big thing going to this tournament was the management of Alexia, like how to get her back in the right way. And then like they threw and had her play like a whole match. And you're like, what the fuck are you doing? Like, this is not the way, you know, don't risk hurting her, you know, like it's, you know, not handling things the way they should be doing it professionally, that the tactics have come into question.
Yes.
And
the fact that we have that as the narrative for it, and it's, you know, 2023, is just, it's shocking, but it's also not, because, you know, as I'm sure everybody knows, the FA banned women's soccer up until the 70s. And so it's like the amount of time that these women are having to play catch up. Yeah. It's just incredible. Like, so, I mean, I'm glad you're bringing it up, because it's just, there's so much extra shit that they have to deal with off the field. And that right. shouldn't be the case, but they are split. So, I mean, that, and obviously, like, we didn't fully get into it, but with the U.S. team, not to, to divert too much, but the reaction that I'm just sort of, you know, there's a lot of people saying, like, maybe you shouldn't be asking for equal pay if you don't perform. And it's just like, it just shows you that between yeah, stuff
but,
like
but,
that
but where
Spain,
the where the U.S. men's team underperforms every fucking
exactly.
thing. Misses World
I mean,
Cups
how many stars
shit,
do they have on their jersey? The answer is zero. That's zero, everyone out there. Yeah, and, you know, and that's
big,
not...
Big facts.
It shouldn't be between, you know, it's not the men's team that... It's not pointing fingers. It's no. really just, like, the reaction to people and how strongly things are pointed at these women who, like, have to, like, become, you know, their own representation to just right. be able to survive and not have second jobs. Obviously, I worked for the Federation, so I saw it firsthand. I worked for both the men and the women. The difference in the way that they're treated is wildly obvious. And, you know, that's all been discussed. But speaking to all these other countries that I haven't even had a chance to get as far as the U.S. and what how they're treated, you know, I'm glad that we're talking about it. I'm glad that was, like, a part of at least got coverage. But it's still, like, you know, it's hard just to watch all this happen. And the narrative still seemed to be, like, well, the women across the world, you know, like, they're not as good, so they don't deserve these things. You know, so Spain being like the extra drama, maybe it's good because it you know shines light on it, but
yeah.
It's certainly also distracting. So I hope that they're able to, at least the women that are there, like harness that and not necessarily have that distract from this point because they have this momentum off this win.
Yeah, absolutely.
Some heavy stuff, but I'm you know coming into this, it's like hard for me to not talk about it because I do feel like you know we're talking about the U.S. team in particular and. So much of the commentary about why they lost had nothing to do with actually on the field. We should critique their performance, which we have.
Right.
And you've stuck to that. Like there was no, you know, there's no sense from people that seem to be like educated in the game. It's what's on the field that matters. But like so much of the talk is about this other extra stuff. And that to me is just sort of like, damn, you know, give these women a little more
well,
credit.
Yeah. I mean, it's a symptom of the times. It's very unfortunately not surprising that that's the
yeah,
way someone,
absolutely.
That's the narrative that gets pushed around it. And that, you know, if you have someone who is a lightning rod for one thing and this, you know, someone who stands for another group comments on it specifically, people are going to jump on that.
Yeah.
And ride the coattails of that, you know, and be like, oh yeah, you know.
Yeah. There's no question. I guess it's just like, we should be surprised, but it's, you know, one of these days, maybe in the near future, we will be surprised and it will actually just be about.
Right.
The soccer, but you know, being able to talk about it and point it out is good. So, appreciate you, Joaquin.
Yeah, of course.
Love yeah. those male allies.
Yeah, well, but that's the thing is that you know, like that's like there's all these stupid stigma and all this kind of shit, and you see with like we're talking about the Spanish Federation, and it's not surprising either that in some of these other very football rich nations that
yeah.
Italy, Argentina, this great footballing heritage.
I mean, even
but
Brazil.
Also, well, even Brazil. But well, Brazil has done well in general. I mean,
it took Marta years of being like so front facing, yeah. you know. So like it's, but yes, now you know there's the progression there. But current day, what you're speaking to, yeah.
But just as far as how good they are, like the product on the field, because these girls weren't allowed to play. You know, it's
yes.
like you know friends of ours, people we knew that were playing in the United States League before it folded, you know, and before the newest iteration, you know, left to go play Europe. And like one of my friends went to play for the Juventus team, but it was the first year, like 5-6 years ago, was the first year. In the history of Italy,
yeah.
of them having the women's league and Juventus having a women's team.
When I was growing up, the path that we were taking was we were going to go to Japan. That was like essentially like it was like a little bit in Europe and then Japan. And I'm not that old. I'm the same age as Rubino.
Yeah, yeah.
So like, you know, it's been everywhere. But like, you know, now that there are more chances and then, you know, getting I mean, we were speaking to, I think, club wise.
Yeah.
Arsenal maybe having the most representation here, like to think of, you know, 15, 20 years ago, like. That we'd even have that conversation of which club has the most representation in the country
right,
or
right, right.
for the you know World Cup. It is awesome and it does show like how things are changing.
Yeah, it definitely shows some growth and progress for some of these leagues. And like I said, I mean, it never used to be that like the English league was really even a rival for the domestic league in the United States.
No,
you know, back then because it wasn't even
yeah.
close. And now you have some of these teams actually, and Arsenal have been leading the way. They have the most wins. Like they're one of the first teams that put a lot of money and effort into. At first, it was called Arsenal Ladies. You know, now it's Women's Arsenal. You know, they've kind of been coming, you know, working
yeah.
their way out of the Stone Age or whatever. You know, you know, just, you know, progressing and women's football had a huge rise in those areas. And now some of those leagues are competitive and you know, actually viable options for good players, you know, like you'll see them go and come back and forth and not really lose a lot of level because, you know, the Women's Champions League in Europe is starting to become a real, you know, a real pull.
Right.
And playing for these big clubs. But you still see it's backwards. Like Real Madrid's no fucking good because they haven't put any investment into their women's team either, you know. Like Barcelona really hadn't done it till recently, but they're living off their name. You know, they get the players because they're Barcelona.
Right.
You know, not because they have great infrastructure. And I mean, like for Spain, they're doing a good job.
Yeah.
You know, but like we said, but with the other teams, like, you know, Italy wasn't a terrible team, but they didn't get out of the group. You know, Argentina has never held a lead in a World Cup game ever. No. Right. They put that stat up in the first game. And, you know, like they held, you know, they hung around for a few, you know, for 30, 40 minutes against a pretty good team and then got smoked by Sweden, you know, by a Sweden backup team.
Right.
You know, put a few past them. And, you know, they weren't terrible, but it also wasn't that exciting watching them because the level wasn't nearly of what you expect. But yeah. It's also because, you know, the game is not given, the support in their home country. And they're, you know, it's also like you'd think Mexico might be a little better too, but same thing. Like no one emphasized the women's soccer there. That there's a reason why until recently it's been fucking 7-8-0 every time the USA played Mexico. Like,
yeah.
Like the gap has gotten a little smaller.
It's a little smaller, but that's not because of the way that the federations are approaching it. It's because, like you said, there are so many different leagues around the world. So women can go, you know, when they can afford it, when they get the exposure, they can go to different leagues, learn something there, like take styles to have that growth. But it's usually not because of the national federation. So that's really where it's lacking. But also speaking to like these clubs, like you're saying, Barcelona, the clubs relying on their name, it's sort of like they're doing kind of the like smallest thing they need to do. And I think, again, like having these conversations, having this tournament, there's so many different clubs that we're talking about, it might put pressure on them to actually like, oh wait, what is actually being taken here to like support the game? Are they putting money into it? Are they like having the proper facilities? Like these are like age old things. Like,
yeah,
what turf fields are we playing on? Like that wasn't a conversation that long ago for the Women's World Cup. So again, it's like all steps forward and hopefully like, so clearly progress made, but small steps. Hopefully we can keep writing that and having these conversations to kind of point that out and see where things go.
Yep, indeed. All right, so let's get down to the action that we saw in Japan versus Sweden. Like I said, I thought it was the most entertaining match of the tournament so far.
You convinced me. Now I'm on board.
All right. We agree. We're in unison here. Like I said, we saw a lot of technical quality on display. I do love some of the direct play from Sweden. I like some of the attacking talent they have. You know, like they are labeled a bit of like set piece merchants because I mean, like they got a bunch of tall girls, they got big imposing people. They're gonna create havoc from there, and that's how they scored one of their goals.
PK technically, I guess, but yeah. The first one was off of that set piece outside.
Yeah. Yeah, deflection came down, and then like that probably would have been a handball penalty if it hadn't gone in after that little scrum because it looked like there was a hand or two hit in there. But they ended up putting it away, and you know this team, like you know, I feel pretty good about it because I've laid some money down on them before they play the United States about them winning this tournament. Have really come forward and like shown. I mean, I think in the group stages they won all their games, all their matches by multiple goals. You know, really putting a good foot forward, like attacking and playing on the front foot. And they looked, even that, you know, in the beginning, like they came out and set the tone of the match. They definitely took, like, they were dominating possession. They had over 60% possession, which it seems like Japan has gotten used to doing against these bigger sides because they, you know, they dealt with Spain having like 70% possession against them and still handled them. And this definitely was not that kind of performance. Japan looked dangerous throughout. Like I said, like when they got chances, which wasn't very often, they got, you know, they worked their way up and got the ball to someone. There weren't a lot of misplaced passes. And that's what I kind of like what I saw about them. I saw a good amount of efficiency. They're like, hey, they're not going to get a lot of chances, but when they get there, they're going to work the ball up to there and get a chance. Whether it's a really good goal scoring chance or not, but they're going to make it count.
They usually execute, which is, I think, just a comparison of the two teams that went out. I will say, like, Japan didn't have a lot of chances, neither did Netherlands, but Japan actually felt more dangerous because the way that they created those chances. They feel to me, style-wise, like, sort of more reminiscent of the last two cycles where there is more creativity, there's more technical skill, like, on the ball. I mean, they're super fast, and the way that they play, constantly moving. It felt like that sort of overall where the women's game was going, so this tournament has been strange for me to watch where it feels like it's dominated more of like the Netherlands, Sweden type play, but it's working for them. So kudos to Sweden, who absolutely dominated the first half. They had 8 shots on goal. Japan, I think, had 1 or maybe 0.
Yeah. Shout out to the Japanese goalkeeper, man.
That could have been a completely different game really early on, probably 2-0, like confidently 2-0.
Yeah. So let's see. Ayaka Yamashita.
Yeah.
What a fucking performance she put on yesterday. I mean, like, fingertip saves. I just got
the chills.
These were saves worthy of the Champions League, World Cup final, this and that. You know, fingertip, like, off the fingertip, off the post and out. This, you know, barely deflecting in. Amazing things where it took a full stretch dive to just get just enough, to deflect it enough, onto the post and out. Yeah. Not even
I
out.
I think, was so, it the second half or was it the first half? Where she was just, like, fully laid out. And I don't think she's that tall either. I'm a former goalkeeper, so watching those like fingertip saves just like sends me, because you know, it's the best feeling. And also, like, definitely not. Well, the Swedish goalkeeper absolutely is the reason why they are where they are right now.
Yeah,
the saves that she made that were amazing, especially against us. Not taking anything away from her, but they definitely were like, you know, her footwork. She's there, right place, right time. The Japanese keeper definitely had to make just big, more amazing saves, like the reactionary saves. Yeah, that
reaction, full stretch, like having, you know,
cat-like
reflexes.
Truly amazing. Yeah, I mean, for me, I definitely feel like I was expecting one thing up until this probably 63rd minute. I just thought there's no way Japan's taking this game. I don't even think they're coming back. They seemed kind of, not necessarily on their heels, but just sort of like they were panic mode the first half, because I think they were caught off guard by the tone that Sweden set. And then kudos to them. Truly changed it. It was around 63rd minute. I don't even think it was off a sub, so I don't know if there was some formation change there or if it was just Sweden getting tired, which possibly could be the case because obviously they played extra minutes in the previous game.
Well, it definitely looked like the legs got to them around that time, because there were a couple times where they had some pretty good buildup, but you just saw it looked like tired legs when they got into the box, right?
Totally.
Like, and kind of like running into a blind alley and then just like, kicking a shot at goal because that's what they want to do, exactly. But it wasn't with purpose. It wasn't a good shot. You know, they were, you know, kicking it but missing by a bit. And it's like, oh, those are the shots of tired legs. Like, they did all the work to get to the box and they're fucking exhausted and they don't see a good option and they just shoot because they're there.
They have no one making that final run.
No. Yeah, exactly. So that's when, you know, there were some tactical substitutions made a little bit after that. I think it wasn't until the 70-something minute.
Yeah.
But it was right around there in the 65th, right around mid-60s where I was like, oh, shit. Like, still getting these chances, but they're getting caught on the break. And these girls look tired when they're running out because – They do play a high action, like, you know, they have those girls on the wings, you know, running up and down. Like, it looks like a tiring fucking game.
That's absolutely what they rely on. That's kind of the OG style that I'm referring to. I think that like Germany kind of perfected.
Like a 4-4-2 behind down the wings. Yes, exactly. Kinda, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like Sweden for sure this tournament, their back line, you know, keeper included, kind of their like stars of the show in a lot of ways that like built up. I think actually their defender, one of their defenders has 4 goals. I think she might be the lead.
She's been doing
so. I mean, that's great. Like, let's, I feel like that's kind of rare. I don't think that's her typical. She's not really known for that role. So, you know, I just think that it's interesting. I don't know if that's a tactical thing or just like a happenstance.
Yeah, it's Amanda Illestad. Yeah, yeah. 4 goals.
4 goals.
From defense. Amazing.
Totally amazing. So I feel like, you know, Sweden, their fitness, that might be a question moving forward. And then that, like you just said, like it's sort of that final push in the second half. I think we saw it. They definitely didn't really create that many chances against us. And so, you know, while they held it down and they were able to convert, which not a lot of teams do on the set pieces, great. But Japan really taking over in that second half, their speed, their technical ability, that's when I actually saw it. So that's where you convert me. It got exciting there. You're right. I didn't expect it to. But weren't able to pull it off. Missed a PK. That was probably
missed the PK and you think it's done there. And then, you know, but they're still relentless. They keep pressing. They get that goal and, you know, and you still have quite a few minutes to go and you're like, fuck, we're 1 goal away from this, you know? And
I thought they were going to tie it up.
It was really close. You know, they had a couple little chances and it got nervous there. But you know, I think like on the night though, you have to say like for the amount of time that Sweden dominated that match and how it could have been 4-0 by the first half, that match wouldn't have been close if it weren't for the keeper, right? That's the only thing that kept that right there, because those were great shots on target, but met with by even better saves. And so I think on the balance of that and the balance of play, you have to say that Sweden fully deserved their victory. You know, they didn't luck their way into it. Like, they won deservedly, and, you know, and also got a little rub of the green. You know, both teams had posts get in their way. That save could have easily got the crossbar off the back of the goalkeeper off the post could have easily gone in.
I mean,
most of the time that will go in.
It happened against us with Sweden before in the PKs. You
exactly.
know?
So, like, you know, you got to get a little rub of the green, you know, like a little bit of stuff to go your way with that. But also they were on, if you had to say in general, they were the better team on the day, where in these other matches, what we saw from Japan was some ruthless efficiency, even without having dominated the ball. But the technical quality and their efficiency with the chances made for a convincing win, even though they didn't dominate play. But you don't have to have the ball for 60-70% to win. That's not what the fucking game's about, right? It's about putting the ball in the back of the net. So
I think that I wanted to see Endo. For me, obviously I'm a little bit biased because she plays for Angel City FC in Los Angeles.
Yes,
but
sir.
It was exciting to see sort of, I felt like she was one of the big difference makers in that momentum switch, the tone switch, because she was creating those chances. She was getting in behind the Sweden back line, which, like I said, I think that they probably are the strongest part of that team, holding it down.
The one thing I'll say is that their fullbacks don't have the same speed that some of the other ones do, because they're all little. Their back line is big across the whole back line, but that also means you don't have as quick of fullbacks to turn and run with it. So they definitely had a couple times where it looked like they leaned on their physicality to try to body them off of it. But like Endo was getting the better of them with step overs and stuff. That left wing, she started to become a menace.
Yeah.
Those last 20 minutes was her, when it would get over there to her, she'd be taking them on, beating them down, cutting back inside, crossing the ball in.
And that's the thing, head up after beating them, like versus with Sweden, like you said, they were kind of getting tired at the end. Kind of like just, what the hell passes essentially, but Endo beating him down the line and then lifting up her head, seeing where she can actually like pass it, cross it, like really purposeful at that point. That's absolutely where I think Sweden was starting to get tired as well. And I think one of the big things I noticed was moving forward, I think much like how Spain needs to work on backline strength, I think Sweden just has, they are kind of one note. So it's worked for them so far, but the dynamics, and that speaks to their backline. Like using sort of the, you know, can they handle different types of players?
And so the big thing looking forward. So like we said, let's look a little bit at their next matchup. We are going to get to the other quarterfinals, which haven't happened yet. But since we're talking about these teams, let's talk about them together. So they face Spain on Tuesday. And, you know, this Spanish team, like we saw, has some very, very talented technical players that, you know, they're going to give Sweden some trouble. It's going to be the toughest test that Sweden's faced as a back line, but I think they can, with their talent on the other side of the ball, I think they can give that Spanish back line a lot of trouble. But what we're going to need to see, like what we haven't talked about her yet, you know, the starting striker, Sina Blackstenius, only has one goal this tournament.
Yeah.
Now, she's a very good player. I watch her at Arsenal. She had a bigger starting role than we really expected from her this season because of the cruciate injuries to Beth Mead and to Viv Miedema. So she started a bunch of games, and they did pretty well, but she wasn't clinical enough in front of goal. She gets in the right places. She had that early chance against Japan yesterday, or this morning, where she was through on goal, one-on-one, and poked it wide.
Poked it wide.
And that, like, from here on out, at this level now, what we're going to need to see from her, if she gets two of those chances, she has to bury one. She can't miss both of them, because, like you said, you can't count on winning every round via free kicks and penalty kicks. Like, when you get a chance like that, like that's, we need the ruthless efficiency, which is the only complaint that for me watching her at Arsenal was the same kind of thing that, like, hey, she's really fucking good. She gets in good positions. She's big. She's physical. She's got all these attributes, but I could use, you know, 30% of these going in instead of 15-20%.
Absolutely.
Right?
And especially that one that poked wide. It's like, I mean, two of those shots, one has to be a must make, and they absolutely both need to be on target.
Yeah.
Well, that's the narrative of this tournament for all these. Like, the amount of times that we've just seen these, like, these women creating chances for themselves and then just not having those clinical finishes, I feel like that's like, can speak to probably most of the teams that are out at this point.
Yeah.
That's like the big reason why.
So let's get your preview for that. All right. So what we currently have, I looked at the betting odds. We have Sweden at about plus 285 to like about even money for Spain. So I mean, Spain is the big favorite going into this semifinal. Do you see it? Do you see them really being as big a favorite as that, or do you think it's more of an even match?
I, after watching these two games currently, it feels like it would be more of an even match because of seeing where both of their weaknesses lie speak to each other. If that makes sense, like having Sweden be so composed and having such a like composed plan or approach, I don't see a lot of weaknesses. But yes. Can they use that even though they haven't been great up top? I think that Spain's back line really was sort of shocking today. They just seemed like they were not like cohesive. They didn't really know where the other player was going to be. And the amount of times that they were almost like, I mean, the goalkeeper basically, like, they passed it out of bounds created a corner kick. There's things right. like that. Like, you can't do that at this point in
the game. No, and the pressure from the Sweden up front, like, they played a pretty good press. I think yes. I think that's definitely going to, like...
I think we need to see if Sweden do that early on, much like today. Like, yeah. set a tone. They need to probably score two in the first half, and then they can hold, hopefully hold Spain sure. down. But, however, Spain at the same time, they have the speed. It seems like they have more of stamina because Sweden got really tired today.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know. I think more of an even match. I'd be surprised if it's a blowout either way.
Yeah, I don't see it. I mean, it's funny because you could think, like, you do the math. Like, well, Japan beat Spain 3-0.
Right.
Sweden beat Japan. Like, oh, well, it doesn't work like that, Doc. It's not the same. Like, obviously, different style. You know, you still have to think that more than likely, I think it'll be closer to, like, I don't think it'll be as much as, like, 60-40 or something. I think Spain will probably have more possession. But if it's 58-42 or 55-45, I think that's perfectly fine for Sweden. Like, yeah. as long as it's not 60-40 or worse, you know, because, you know, once you get to that number, then it's also the amount that your team runs around, like the energy wasted chasing a ball.
Yeah.
Like, as long as it's not too drastic. And the thing is that you know, we saw that the technical level from Sweden as well, they can – when they're, you know, especially in the first half, before they look fatigued in the second half, there was a lot of good, tight, quick passing. So the technical level is very high in the squad. And I think they're going to be able to handle some of the Spanish action they have. I mean, like you said, you know, Spain also don't have all of their best options available from the start of the match right now with yeah. Alexa being out and all that. But they're very talented. They have a lot of great technical level and people that know how to work the ball around, you know? So,
I wonder, like, I'm just thinking about midfield too. Like, I feel like Spain today, while not the ones converting the chances, I was impressed by midfield and just in terms of like holding and pushing when needed
sure.
on both ends. And I think they definitely helped out the defense. And then of course they were creating chances through the middle quite a lot. Like, their players more than anyone, I think, not knowing their center mids that well before this tournament, I saw those players involved more than I've seen most other center mids throughout yeah. this tournament. So they made more of an impact. So that sort of was at least made an impression on me, where I'm curious to see how they seem quicker, maybe more a little technical than Sweden in the middle. So I'm curious to see if that's maybe where they can get the.
Yeah. I think that's definitely one of the most like unique battles to watch there. Cause who controls that will definitely control the tempo. So that's going to be dope to watch.
Yeah.
All right. Well, this is the Red Card District. We always make predictions here. Tell me who you think is going to win. If you, I'll go first. I'll tell you what I feel. I do see this being a very tight match. I see some goals in it. So I'm saying 2-1 Sweden, regular time.
I don't want to copy you. So I'm going to say 2-1 Sweden, extra.
Extra time. Okay.
I
didn't know I was stealing your thunder. My bad.
No, like, you weren't. Pick. I literally was like, I'm going with Sweden, but in terms of score line, I can't picture them scoring more than two.
Yeah.
But I do think that they're going to eke it out.
So 1-1, 2-1, or either after extra time or penalties or something?
Yeah.
Yeah, and look, if it comes down to that, which goalkeeper do you trust more in penalties? Like, I don't trust that Spanish keeper.
No, she's the reason why if, you know, and again, former keeper here, it's never on the keeper. But today...
No, but when all her things are equal, you yeah. know, it's like a...
Absolutely, obviously, in PKs. She's also, you know, she's shorter. Yeah. And just confidence level, which isn't her fault necessarily. I think it's the way that her backline's communicating with her. They set her up for failure in a lot of ways, which yeah. is not her fault.
But she also doesn't look as comfortable some of the keepers with the ball at her feet.
Absolutely. She's not leading the team in that way at all, versus the Swedish goalkeeper is constantly involved and making yeah. those really strong decisions.
Right. And very, very imposing and very decisive, which yeah. is what you want. You want to, like, commands her box well, which is not what you would say about the other.
Yeah. Oof, rough. I always hate dog and keepers, because I'm just like, you know, it's the whole team effort, but that's just my personal history.
Goalkeepers union, now you're like, yeah, no, exactly. I can't throw him under the bus.
I can't.
But this bitch doesn't have it.
I'm still rooting for her, but I don't think she's exactly. Hopefully it doesn't get to PKs, because we've had too many. They're heartbreaking.
Yeah, I would like to see it won outright.
Yeah,
preferably in regular time.
Right. Because you've got money on that now.
Well, I may or may not. Yeah. It is in my best interest that Spain make Sweden make the final. That'd be wonderful.
Well, and also, like, it is always nice. Maybe, I mean, haters are going to hate, as they say. I don't think it will change anyone's mind. But just personally, to see Sweden take maybe the whole tournament might validate a little bit of us going out early, because it's like, well, we lost to the winners.
Right. It's the small things, right? Like, when you lose, I remember. As a Dodger fan, a couple of years ago, we lost to the Washington Nationals, but then they won the World Series. Like, oh, we lost the eventual champions, and they weren't rivals. We didn't lose the fucking Giants or anything. And sorry for making a fucking American sports analogy, but you know,
or
like
Astros,
or the Astros, or the Trash Bros.
Really hate. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, exactly. Well, all right. Well, we've gone through most of this. Let's do a quick prediction for what we have going on tonight. We have action between France and the Australian team, the Matildas, playing at home. I think in any other circumstance, in any years prior, this would be a very heavily favored French team, and they are still favored. They're favored about, you know, 2-1 over the Matildas, but they're playing at home. They're playing in Australia. They have a home crowd. They have a very talented squad where most of their players, I mean, the Australians have players in all the top leagues around Europe. Like, they've been sending, like, where it used to just be one or two, now a good majority of their squad plays all at big clubs. So it's not, they're not at a huge disadvantage anymore, you know, and they have very talented players. So what say you about what you think is going to happen tonight?
I'm definitely curious. I mean, I do think that it will be a surprise if Australia pulls it off. In that they are underdogs. They don't have as much talent as the French team. However, I think we might see Sam Kerr start. Shout out to Tony. I'm going to fuck up his last name. Gustavsson. He was the assistant coach to Pia Sundhage, so I actually worked with him.
Okay.
Fantastic person, coach for the Matildas. But I really do believe in the home crowd bump is absolutely a thing.
Absolutely.
We saw it in South Africa. It for sure will help them, but I feel like it's going to be closer than what people expect, but I would not. I do think the underdogs are the underdogs for a reason, but yeah. I'm still rooting for them.
Well, I got a shout out to my Gooners in the Matilda squad. We got Steph Catley and who else we got? We got and Caitlin Ford, of course. No one can forget Caitlin Ford doing it for the Matildas. And we're also likely to see. There's a good chance we're going to see Sam Kerr back tonight. You know?
Yes.
So that's obviously a huge bump for them. You know, one of the best players in the women's game. If she's fit to go from the beginning, that's a huge bump for them. And you have to say that, like, even though, like, the French team is still dominant and a great presence, that, like, there's enough game changers and people that can make a big difference in that all throughout this Australia squad that, you know, they got more than a fighting chance at home. I'm gonna go for them to win. Maybe it'll be after extra time. I don't know how, but I think they're gonna win 2-1.
I love that. That's what I want. I hope that happens. Yeah,
I know. I'm kind of wishing it.
Yeah, exactly.
It could be great.
Joaquin's manifesting a Matildas win.
So the next time we're going to have you go to the score first because I keep saying what you're going to say first. Right. So I got to give you the credit on the next one or let you go first with it. Well, let's move on from that. The other match that we get tonight is Colombia versus England. England are, after the other exits in the tournament, I think England are the number one favorite. I think their first favorite with Spain second to win the tournament. Do you give Colombia much of a chance? I mean, they've looked decent, but I don't know. Like, they haven't faced a team nearly as good as England so far.
No, I mean, I think that they have a certain momentum and a certain fire. And like, we saw it with the Men's World Cup. Like, that can take you. You know, that can absolutely surprise people. It's almost like, this is maybe an insane analogy, but like playing poker against a player that's never played before, you can't really like predict what's going to happen.
Yeah, you don't know
what the
fuck they're
gonna do.
So
it's hard to strategize. Yeah. And I think that England absolutely has like an established way of playing. So, if the coaching staff has done their job, maybe you can prepare Colombia to have sort of a response to that. I'm not sure Colombia is good enough to have that, you know, surprise poker player effect, but it certainly will be an exciting game and awesome for Colombia to see how far they've gotten so far.
All right, so give me your score prediction.
I'm going to say 2-0 England.
Fuck, this is why it's a good thing you did that first because that was my score prediction too. We're really fucking boring here. I'm going to go 3-1 England.
I like that too, but yeah, I went 2-0.
Yeah, and we're going to get a new Arsenal striker, Alessia Russo, on the score sheet. She's going to get a brace. Nice. Two from her. Let's get it.
As he's wearing an Arsenal jersey.
I know,
says.
Fucking Homer, right? This guy. I know. Hey, I'll tell you, hey, we're mad represented. We got.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I wore this for the women today, not because it's the Arsenal first match of the season coming up.
LAFC, whoops, they're playing. I think they're actually about to say, ACFC has two players, I believe.
June and who else?
I feel like we got New Zealand player. I just forgot her name. That's bad. But yeah.
Yeah.
We can cut that part, right?
Nah, that's okay. All right. Well, the predictions are in. We got that for you. Lots of exciting action to see tonight. Excited for it. We're down to the fun part of the tournament where it's all the pressure's there. Everyone's got the pressure of their nation on their back. And we're going to see something. Hopefully we see another two great quarterfinals tonight. And yeah, and if we get it all together, hope we can get together before the final to talk about these wonderful semifinals, we'll give a nice little preview of that. Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much. It's great. It's been great having you, Libby.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. It's fun to get back into the football world.
Yes, indeed. Great chat. Great chat indeed.
Appreciate it.
So, yeah. So we will get back together again for one more conversation before the final. And that is it from us here at the Red Card District. So check us out, and we will be back another time soon. All right, peace.
Ciao.